Married with Children, the podcast, hosted by Dustin and Callie. Follow us on social media, on Twitter, @Married_Show, Facebook, Married with Children Show, on Instagram, Married with Children Show, or reach out to us in an email, marriedwithchildrenshow@gmail.com. We're always looking for guests and sponsors. If you have a name of a guest that would be an interesting interview on the Married with Children Show, please send that information to us through social media or straight to our email address. Also, if you have a small business that you'd be interested in being a sponsor on the show, please reach out to us through an email so that we can work out a way that best suits you and our listeners. Also, if you like the podcast, be willing to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Welcome back to Married with Children, the podcast. We have another guest in studio with us tonight. Going to talk about something that probably most of you listeners don't have much background in, and that's the Highland Games. And we have a competitor in the Highland Games with us tonight, and I'm really excited to spend some time kind of talking about what the Highland Games are, what goes into it. It's a very interesting event, so I've always wanted to kind of promote it as we got this podcast started, and we're lucky enough to have a competitor in here with us. But before we introduce her, Callie, good evening.
Hello.
How are you?
Not bad. Not too bad so far.
Awesome. And our competitor, our guest in the studio, who we thank so greatly for being here, is Victoria Shireman. And Victoria, good evening.
Hello.
All right. Victoria, if you would, to start here, can you give our guests a little bit of a background of you and, you know, where kind of your athletic stuff started?
Sure. My athletic journey started in middle school with cross country. Quickly realized that was not the sport for me. And switched over to track and field in middle school. Did absolutely everything. High school sprinted and threw. Got recruited out of high school to throw for Indiana Wesleyan University. I was a two-time national champion in college.
Awesome.
In the hammer throw.
Very cool.
Yeah, three-time national runner-up. Got second more times than I won, but that's okay. Got out of that. Then I actually coached collegiately, coached throwers for a couple of years, and then settled into teaching. And from there, just kind of got bored, got wrangled into it. I got peer pressured. A friend said, hey, here's this thing. We should try it. And I said, no, I don't think I'm interested. Over and over, and then finally one day he said, I actually submitted your papers, so you're going to do it with me. And I said, okay.
That's the best way to get involved in something, is just be told you have to go do this.
Yes.
Going back to you throwing in college, though, mm-hmm. What all are the throwing events in college?
In college, you throw the shot put and discus, which are standard in high schools in Indiana, and then you will also throw javelin and the Olympic hammer.
The javelin, I think, would be the, and you can tell me I'm totally wrong, I think that would probably be the most difficult one.
Yes.
Because it just seems awkward.
It is awkward, and it's the lightest of all the implements.
I know this is a really stupid question. That's the one where you, like, literally just have the little stick and you throw it.
Looks like a spear.
I mean, I'm sure, I know there's a lot more to that.
Yeah, like, it's just totally. It's a stick you toss out like you're playing fetch
I'm
with your
dog.
I'm
just making sure that I'm mentally picturing the correct sport.
Yes, okay. You got it. Okay. You got it.
Gotcha.
But it's really light and you run with it and you don't run in any of the other events. And when you throw it, I only threw it a handful of times in competition. You really want to throw it like a baseball. Because that's how we've been taught to throw our whole lives. But if you do that, it creates a lot of tension in your elbow. And a lot of people will actually tear their tendons in their elbow.
Really?
From it. So you have to have incredible flexibility because your arm is supposed to go straight back and then straight up over your head. That's how you're supposed to throw it. I'm not very mobile, so I couldn't ever do it very well. But it is hands down the hardest.
And wow. Would you say that it is the most... Is it the most finesse and technique?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, and I know that a lot of people, I think that shot and discus and hammer are a lot of just brute strength, but it's a lot of finesse and technique as well. Mm-hmm. But it, that one, the javelin, just seems like to me it's a lot of that.
Yeah, you can't just power arm a javelin very well. Which is funny that you mentioned that, because there is a whole style of technique that involves you run down the runway, and then as you throw it, you're like, part of your lever is to throw your body on the ground. And so it is very delicate and a lot of finesse. And then you see them and they're running and then bam, they just hit the ground. Hilarious. Every time. Hilarious.
Yeah. So they face plant on purpose.
Yes.
I'm going to have to look that up on YouTube afterwards.
A whole tactic. Some people do it on accident, but
right.
It's, some people, they plan it, and that's like their finish.
So that had to be created out of the person that didn't do it on purpose and then said, I've created really this far. Whole technique.
I would think so.
It has to be where it came
from. They must
have
like PR'd on that one and like threw it really right. far. So and I'm like, gonna do okay, this let's all try the time this again. Now. And that's awesome.
All right, so now you got peer pressured into the Highland Games. Tell us a little bit about the background of what the Highland Games are.
So Highland Games are traditional Scottish athletics. And what this, as far as I know, originated as was the men would get drunk, start seeing who could throw heavy things the furthest. They drink some beer and start challenging each other to different competitions, and it has just slowly evolved into a regulated sport. Mm-hmm. But it is essentially throwing heavy things as far or as high as you can. In standard apparel, you have to wear a kilt. If you don't wear a kilt, you don't get to compete.
All right. I didn't realize that either. So that you have to be in a kilt. Mm-hmm. And is that male and female?
Male and female.
Okay. Now, is there like you said it's sanctioned. Is there like a series that you compete in?
Yes, there are a couple of different ones, and I actually can't remember any of them right now.
That's okay.
So the system that keeps track of everyone in the United States, because there's a different kind of unified body in overseas in Europe, is called NASGA, North American Scottish Association, or something along those lines, Scottish Games Association, maybe. And that keeps track of all competitors and all scores. And then that's the database that they use to pull rankings for things like nationals and worlds.
Okay. All right. So let's go through the events that you compete in.
Okay.
And let me ask you this. Are the women's events and the men's events, outside of the weight of the objects, do you compete in the same exact events the men do?
Yep.
Okay. So go ahead and start with, what's the first event you would like to talk about?
So you typically have a set schedule, and men are the quote-unquote traditional competitors, so they will usually go through the set schedule, and women then rotate in. But you almost always start with stone events. And okay. You have a heavy stone and a light stone. So the heavier stone is called Braemar. You also almost always progress from heavy events to light events. So it's easier on your body. But the Braemar stone is a standing throw, if you are familiar with shot put at all. So it is, and you're going to throw it just like you would a power throw in shot put. For women, the stone is usually 14 or 16 pounds. For men, it's going to be between 18 and 24. Because there is kind of a range, but there's not necessarily a standardized, like, it has to be this weight.
Because it's an actual stone, correct?
It is a literal stone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not like a
rep. Not like a shot put, like, no, it's always a stone. This amount. Oh.
I actually think that I have some stones in my trunk, if you guys want to
see. I want to see them after the episode.
If you want to see the implements later, I actually think I have all of my implements in my trunk. So
that's great.
But they are, it's just a literal stone that someone found in a quarry or got in their yard or some people.
And it hits in that range. So you're like, okay, mm-hmm. Let's do this one.
You know, awesome. I couldn't imagine if the person that, and I hope this never happens to you, but if someone broke into your car and got in your trunk and saw these implements in the trunk, they have to think, I don't think I want to mess with this human
being.
Yeah,
I know, right?
They would be very confused for a while. So one of the events involves a pitchfork. And for a while, I just left my pitchfork in my backseat.
I love that.
So, like, you're thinking about breaking into my car, but I'm driving around with a pitchfork. You sure you want that?
So, when we talk about the, you know, the stone put, or what is it? What's a good distance? Mm. What's your PR?
Well, stones are actually my worst event, probably. In Braemar, you're going to look for something like a really good stone throw for women is going to be like a mid to high 30 in Braemar. Wow. For a 14-pound stone, if you can get 35 or 36, you're doing pretty well.
Wow.
My PR is 32 because I'm not very good at stone.
Why do you think you're not very good at it?
Oh, I have bad timing.
Okay.
Do you do the whole like spin?
So, oh,
well, I guess they don't do that in shot put. You just kind of do the whole.
In the Braemar stone, you're not allowed. So it's a standing throw. You're not allowed to.
Oh, I guess that's right.
Advance towards the trig. So you have to plant your feet and keep them there. In the open stone, which is then, I think we throw a 9-pound stone pretty consistently. You can move. So you could do like a glide shot put. You could do a rotational. Right. A lot of people do the shuffle. If you're familiar with the seventh grade shuffle, because we throw off of grass.
Okay.
So you're throwing in cleats or turf shoes or something that gives you a little bit more traction.
Right.
I actually do rotate. I don't do a full rotation because that's too scary on the grass. I'm pretty sure I'm going to fall down or blow out a knee or something. But I do a partial rotation because I am short.
Oh, to get more leverage or something.
Yeah, okay. Compared to almost everyone I compete against, I am generally the shortest person on the field.
How tall are
you? That's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, I know this is going to shock, but like, you're taller than me.
Well, that's...
In fact, I am. I'm 5'7".
I was going to say, like, you're not short.
No, I'm a very normal sized person.
What?
Well, because in case, just
yeah,
to
I knew
throw this
was coming up.
Just to throw this out there, in case anyone didn't know, the average height for a woman is 5'5", which therefore I am slightly above average because I am 5'5½". So, I mean, you're doing well over that.
You're a C+.
Well, you know, I can't do anything about how tall I am. So take it.
What's the normal height that you're of your competitors?
We are a solid range. So the number one female right now in the United States and the world, she's probably 6'1" or 6'2".
Wow.
And then from there, there's a fairly good interval down to me, but usually 5'9", 5'10", is the average on the field. On the women's side, it's becoming more and more like elite collegiate throwers who are not going to the Olympics, looking for something else to do, get into Highland Games.
That's kind of cool.
We're up and coming.
Very cool.
Gotcha.
Okay, so we've got tell me what the name of the stone is again.
Braemar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's another event?
So you've got your Braemar stone and your open stone. From there, in a traditional order, you are going to move to the weights. And this, you have heavyweight or lightweight, because we're good at naming stuff, apparently, in the Scottish community. And the heavyweight is heavy, and then the lightweight is lighter. So for the men, the heavyweight is 56 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And women's heavyweight is 28 pounds. So then the lightweight is exactly half of that. So men throw a 28-pound lightweight and women throw a 14-pound lightweight.
And does this have to be thrown one-handed?
Yes. So the stones are very much like a shot put. The next thing that this is closest to, the weights is relatively similar to discus.
Okay.
You are physically holding on to something, and it's a lot heavier, obviously, than a discus. So it's a little bit different, but it is a one-handed throw. You can only hold on to it. And you ideally want to turn in two circles through the trig, which, 9 feet. I think a trig is 9 feet back to front.
Okay.
So, and unlike collegiate throwing, like Olympic throwing, you have to start and end with 1 foot in the trig. So when I start my weight throw, I always line up on the far right side and I start with 1 foot in and 1 foot out. So I have room to wobble, to move to the left if I need to, which I almost always do, just based on my technique, how I drive through the ring. So then I will finish, ideally, both feet right in the middle. But if I were to finish off to the left with 1 foot outside,
you're still okay.
That's still a legal throw as long as my right foot didn't get out at any point.
Okay. Now, when we say, explain to me what the weight looks like. Is it got a handle? Is it a chain? Is it...
So, there is a standardized length, usually. I don't remember what that number is. So, my weights, it is just a cube of steel. Just a little cube with 3 or 4 chain links on it, and then just a round steel handle.
Okay. Are some of them with no chain just fixed? Or is it always a chain?
You will have some that are fixed, but those are only used for the weight over bar, which is a height event.
Okay.
So you want it to be, there's a standard length for the distance events, and then we shorten it for the height events. And you want, essentially, you want it to be fixed for the height events. Usually you'll end up with like maybe 1 chain length, but not a lot of distance between the actual implement and the handle. Mm.
And I watch some of the weight over the bar to get prepared for this. I think that's the craziest thing I've ever seen. The pitchfork one we're going to get to is really cool, but the crazy thing to me is, and I'm gonna let you explain it first, and I'm gonna get into it.
Okay, well, weight over bar, you take your heavyweight, so men have that 56 pound weight, women it's a 28 pound weight, and you stand somewhere in the vicinity of the bar. A lot of people line up pretty close to right underneath it, and you are throwing that weight up over your head, over the bar directly behind you.
And how high is the bar?
That depends on the competition and the level of the competition. So usually we start relatively low to give everyone a shot. Elite level women, it's going to be 15 to 18 feet.
So it starts low and then everybody clears it. It's like a high jump type.
It is, and
thing.
you get 3 attempts at each height.
Gotcha.
To make it over.
What amazed me, and you weren't out here when I watched the video. These guys at the Arnold Classic were doing this. And I mean, you like squat down and it's between your legs and then you're launching it. But when they knew they had made it, and you could tell obviously they had practiced, they would back up on the other side where the weight is going to come down, and they're like celebrating, and they would take one glance up and they knew where it was going to go. Yeah. And I'm thinking,
that's what I like.
My
I would,
luck is it's coming back on top
I know,
of my head.
I would run straight forward the other direction because I wouldn't know where in the world
which
it would come
obviously
down.
These guys have done this thousands and thousands of times, but it was just amazing. They just kind of float backwards and celebrate, and I'm thinking that thing's still not come down yet.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And there was one guy at the Arnold Classic that I watched that he actually I don't think that was that one. I think that was the pitchfork, but he threw it over the rafter. That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that one. But it was crazy. So
with the weight over bar, the fastest way actually to hit yourself is to run out from underneath it.
Because is that right?
So they kind of float backwards and celebrate, because when you finish it, you finish kind of in an inverted C position. And if you do that, when you let go, it's automatically going to go behind you, and you can just feel it. You can usually see it. Most people, when they finish, their heads are looking up, so you're looking at it.
Gotcha.
But when they throw it, and they don't finish and don't hit that inverted C position, and then, like, step forward, they've thrown it out directly in front of their bodies, and now have stepped directly
well,
into
that
the
makes,
path.
That makes
that
sense.
That does. So, coming from that Olympic throwing style, is that one that takes a long time to kind of transition to?
For most people, it doesn't seem to. For me, it has. It is a lot like an Olympic snatch, if you are familiar with Olympic lift.
Absolutely.
And that is timing. And as we are finding, I am very strong. And I have a lot of just explosive power, but my timing is bad. So,
I would think that's a lot of hips. You know, getting your hips through, and again, the timing of when you hit those hips.
Yes. And I have come a long way this season. I spent a lot of time in the off season with just a handle in my living room, just going through the motions for hours. And this season, so far preseason, I've had pretty good success. Because my timing is so bad, I'll come through with my hips and then pull, and so I throw it all with my low back, which I seem to have a very strong low back. But doing that, I can't compete with those girls who are throwing 18 feet. So
well, and even when I was in the weight room and coaching football, some guys who were not as strong as others but had that timing, they could snatch weights that would just drive guys nuts because they knew they were stronger than that kid. Every other lift they could beat him at, but they didn't have that form and technique to do it.
Yes.
So, okay. So, we've talked about, you said the stone throw is not, the stone put is not one of your, the Braemar stone is not one of your best.
Not my best. We're working on it.
Where are we putting the weight over the bar?
Right now I'm sitting right around 16 feet.
Okay.
The target would be, I think the world record for women right now is 17 feet, 3 inches. So.
Is that, and that's what the heavyweight?
Yeah, the 28 pound weight. Okay. So that's the goal, over 17 feet, 4 inches.
Well, and it doesn't, you know, that's one of those things where when you say, well, you're at 16 and 17, four, I that know, doesn't right? sound that far, but that's a long way with 28 pounds.
Yes.
And when I ask these, by no means am I being critical, because I know that I couldn't get that up and over. So don't ever think that I'm questioning you there. So.
And so then when you throw it, I mean, like if it hits it, obviously, I mean, does it have little thing? I mean, like to where it, how it holds it, like it could knock the bar off.
So it is held up by, it's a pulley system. So it's held up on strings. So you don't have to worry about knocking the bar off. However, you can hit it and just like swing the bar away, and if it doesn't go over the bar, it does not count. So if you like hit it, sometimes you'll see it and they'll throw up and don't have quite enough of that backward momentum, and they'll land on top of the bar and then spring forward. That doesn't count. That's a miss.
Gotcha. So, but if you hit it and it goes over, it's okay.
There have been some times actually that I have hit it on the way up and like taken the bar up with my weight, and then it ends up flipping over.
Oh, that's awful.
And that it still counts, but it's like the ugliest possible way to do it.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. What's another event?
All right. So we have the stones, the weight over bar, and then the weight for distance events. And then the Olympic, not the Olympic. Nope, that would be the Olympics. The hammer, which is not an Olympic hammer. It's more like a mace. So you have a head, which is usually just like a steel, kind of like a shot put, within a pole in it. Sometimes that pole is wood, like a broomstick. Usually they use PVC because it's got more give in, so it lasts a little longer. The wooden ones tend to get broken pretty quickly. But you have a heavy hammer and a light hammer. For men, I'm pretty sure the heavy hammer is 20 or 22 pounds, and then the light hammer is 16. And for women, it's a 16-pound heavy hammer and a 12 or 14-pound light hammer. I can't remember. It's substantially lighter than the heavy hammer.
So just to clarify, as we're going through this, when you go to a competition, you have to use the implements that they provide, correct?
Correct.
So do they post those things prior to the competition? Like, this one's going to be a wood hammer, or this is going to be, you just show up and
not
you...
Not generally, yeah, you just show up. At this point, this I think will be my third season. So there are very few games on my schedule this season that I haven't been to before. Okay. So I know the athletic director, so I know kind of...
So they usually use the same implements every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. Hmm.
So your personal hammer that you practice with, PVC?
Yes.
Okay, so and that's the standard that you usually see?
Yep.
Okay, very cool. Mm. Now, the one that I think is probably the coolest is the one that we've kind of talked about with the pitchfork. Explain that one to us.
So that is called the sheaf. And it is usually you have a bale of, it's baling twine, and then you wrap it in burlap. Women will throw a 10 or a 12 pound sheaf. Men throw a 16 or a 20 pound sheaf. And you're throwing it for height. So there's a bar at a distance behind you, but you are throwing it with a pitchfork. So you're going to stab it with your pitchfork, and you're going to try and get it up over your shoulder, behind you, over a bar.
Over a bar.
Over a bar. Has to clear the bar. If it doesn't clear the bar, it does not count.
So it's kind of like the weight for height, but you're swinging it with a pitchfork. It's pretty wild to see. Now, you may not, and I'm getting this information off of Wikipedia, which I understand.
Sure.
The concern
as
with Wikipedia.
As a teacher, you should know, or as an educator, and that's not always the most.
I agree, but I'm going to be honest. I searched a lot of Highland Games sites, and there wasn't a lot that really broke down the events.
As,
I mean.
At like for a like dummies like us that don't have any idea.
There is no Highland Games for Dummies book.
Yeah, that's right.
I did try to do some research, but it says here that some people argue that this isn't a true Highland Games event. Have you heard that?
I have not heard that, but I would believe it.
Because this is again from
from
Wikipedia, it says there is significant debate among athletes as to whether the sheaf toss is in fact an authentic Highland event. Some argue it's actually a county fair event, but all agree it's a great crowd pleaser.
Yes.
So I don't know. I mean,
I would agree with that. I don't. So in the context of how, you know, Highland Games originated, I don't see where they would have had pitchforks or bales of hay or anything of the sort. But as it sort of has become more Americanized, we're kind of making it our own. And it is a huge crowd pleaser.
Well, it's cool
they
to see.
They love it when we throw the sheaf.
So, again, this to me, as much as some of the other events I think are very different from your collegiate throwing background, this one is totally outside of that realm.
Yes.
How much time has it taken to kind of get this figured out?
The sheaf is a mysterious creature. Initially, so very first time I had a sheaf, I won the event. Had never seen it before. Used
really?
Somebody else's pitchfork. Didn't know what I was doing at all. They walked me through like the basic movements, and I think because I didn't know what I was doing, I just did it. Like I didn't really think about
it.
And then the next season, quickly became one of the best sheaf tossers in the nation, and then fell apart. when I don't think about it, it's not a difficult movement, and then I got really concerned with exactly how I was trying to do it and sort of fell apart. It's not that complicated when you actually stop and look at it. So there are a number of different techniques that people use, but you really just have to find what's comfortable for you. Because you are throwing with the fork, it can create some really weird levers that you're not ready for. And I have a buddy who does it, and he is actually currently the best sheaf tosser in the world. But at one point last season or two seasons ago, thought like he fractured a vertebra.
Oh my gosh.
Throwing the sheaf. He didn't. In the end, it wasn't broken, but it was something that had to be worked around for a while. But you're trying to make a check mark with your fork. So you want a big backswing, go straight down, straight up. That's the idea. Ideally in one kind of one plane. So the very first time I ever threw sheaf, what I was told is you're in between two panes of glass and you're making a check mark with your fork. So if you can figure that out, not so tough.
Is it more timing or more power?
For me, it's more power. Timing is really important, like all of them. I have done pretty well on just power.
Muscling it.
Yeah. Really trying to get my timing honed in this semester. When your timing is right, so when that timing is there, it is probably the easiest event because it just slides off your fork.
Okay. So then are there any other events? Am I missing one?
Caber.
Oh yes, that's the best.
Can't
one.
Can't forget about the caber.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, tell us, what is the caber toss?
So the caber toss seems to be the crowd favorite. It is, in fact, a tree that someone has cut down, cut to a length, and then tapered one end so you have a hand grip, and you try to flip that tree trunk end over end. So the target of the caber, this one is different in how it's measured. The target is to get the caber to flip end over end and land exactly straight up, exactly in front of you. So then it is measured on the face of a clock, with 12 o'clock being a perfect turn, and then degrees off of that. And then if you don't get a turn, they measure it on the angle.
Okay. But again, going into this, you have no idea the size of the tree. Is there a standard length that you usually see?
On women, you are probably going to get anywhere from 14 to 16 feet long.
Oh my gosh.
But the weight is going to vary. I've had cabers that are 25 pounds. I've had cabers that are 75 pounds.
Wow.
So.
And the technique is basically, you know, you basically hold it up towards your chest, mm-hmm. you know, your gut region, and then you're just literally powering it and flipping it
yep.
end over end.
Yep.
So what is a typical length of the man's division's tree?
I don't know that one as accurately. I think they usually go like 18 to 20 feet.
I mean, they're long.
Maybe a little really? Longer. Yeah, they're long.
And the weight, do you know any?
No, a lot of times. So women don't seem to be as good at caber yet. Give us time. But a lot of times on the men's side, they'll do a challenge caber. So it is they'll do challenge cabers before. So that's going to be a lighter caber that you have to turn in order to turn the competition caber. So they'll start with like an 80 or a 90 pound caber to work up to 120 or 130 pound caber.
Wow.
Then I have also seen it where after they have the caber, so everyone gets a turn at the regular caber, they have a challenge caber that'll be like 150 pounds and 22 feet long.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
So obviously that implement is not in your trunk.
That one is not. Those are behind my house.
But you do have these.
We do. So a couple summers ago, my training partner is Zach Riley,
mm-hmm.
who is he's a big Highland deal. He is officially declared professional, so he's a pro Highland gamer. He and I went to Karen Chilman's property
yep.
and walked around, and they cut down some trees for us and delivered them to my house. So we have a stack of trees that they just hang out behind my house under a tarp, and those are our cabers.
That's pretty cool.
Can I ask, do you have neighbors?
Yes.
Have they come across and asked, like, why are you out back throwing this giant tree?
Oh, they haven't. One of my neighbors, they have a animal farm, and I will notice that the cows a lot of times will come to the edge of the fence when we're out throwing, and they just kind of hang out and watch us. And no one has stopped and asked any questions, but our house is the first house on kind of a long gravel drive, and a lot of times we'll be out practicing and look up, and there'll be like three or four cars where everyone's like coming home from work, and they've just stopped to watch us.
I can't believe no one has come up and asked, because I would have to.
Yeah, they cheer. They'll cheer for us from their cars.
Especially like if you've seen them doing it like more than one time, be like, this isn't just like, hey, they're yes. just having a...
The first time I'm like, okay, something kind of going back to how the Highland game started. I'm going to assume they've had a little bit of fun in the afternoon.
Right,
That's exactly right. This is how they're going to challenge each other. But no, when I've come home multiple nights and they're throwing trees in their backyard, I'm probably going to stop by and check and just see what is exactly going on.
Yeah. A lot of times, once again, timing is my biggest issue. So sometimes I'll just pick them. And then just walk to get the feel for it, because caber, you want to feel it, and it's tricky. But so I'll just pick it up and then walk it as far across my yard as I can, and I hear the cars going by, and it's just, I just have this tree trunk, and I'm just hunkered over, just walking with this tree trunk, trying not to drop it, and I can't imagine what they're thinking.
Is the balance part of it
yes.
difficult?
Yes. So that's the biggest issue. So because women's cabers are fairly light, I mean, in the grand scheme of it, 75 pounds isn't a lot,
right?
Even when you're, you know, carrying it on your belly and holding it awkwardly, so the biggest issue is keeping it up, getting up and getting control of it. If you don't have control of it and try to turn it, you're probably not going to turn it. You might break it. You're almost definitely going to hurt yourself, because it's just a tree. I mean, you're just carrying a tree trunk. So I have been working on getting that balance, and so I just pick it up, and I apparently really like to do it on windy days. Seems the only time I do it now, but it's windy all the time now because it's spring. But just pick it up and just walk around and let the wind catch it and try to move with it and figure out, okay, so if it does this, I need to move like this to gain control. Wow. So that way, if I'm at a competition and it's super windy, hopefully I can still turn a caber.
Wow.
So when we're talking about that caber toss, what is kind of the technique? Obviously, we're trying to balance. Is there a set? You know, you said kind of the trig earlier. Is mm-hmm. there a set area you have?
Not usually. They generally just take us to an open area of the field where we're far enough away from spectators that we don't hurt somebody. And you, if it's a smaller field, you'll be given a step limit. If it's a bigger field, you can kind of run wherever you want. So generally, you have to take at least 3 steps in a, to declare a direction. And then from those 3 steps, you can throw, because you have to be headed a specific direction so they can judge you on that direction.
So is there a beyond the set limit, is there a certain area it has to hit in?
No.
Just it. So even if you kind of twist, as long as it's 12 o'clock from the direction you...
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Try not to throw it into the spectators.
That would... That, is there, that's is there the a deduction?
Rule. That's the... I don't actually think so. If I throw it in the stands and it's 12 o'clock, I'm going to demand that 12 o'clock be recorded.
I just said I really want to come to the Highland Games. Now I'm concerned about where to sit at, but
just be ready to run.
Okay. I can do that. When now, as you're coming up to throw the caber, do you want it to start kind of falling away from you?
You do. So the caber, first you're going to so use tacky. I actually just use spray glue because I found it works the best. So you're going to essentially glue your hands, your fingers together.
Really?
Yes, it took me a long time to get used to that. But most powerful position, those fingers are stuck together. And you, to pick it, that's to get it into your hands, it's like the very bottom of a power clean. So okay. You're going to lean that puppy against your shoulder. And I squeeze it with my neck because I'm still a little bit timid, a little bit afraid of it. And you're going to work your hands down. And so squeeze, get as close to the bottom as you need to. Squeeze with your palms and then drive your hips like you're doing, you're starting a power clean. And pop the caber up and then try to catch it on your pinkies and your ring fingers.
Okay.
Which are glued dramatically together. At that point, you want to get it up. I like to carry it kind of just above my belly button, because it still gives me some room to move. If you get it up too high, you're really kind of stuck doing whatever the caber wants you to do. And then from there, you are going to walk or run. I push really hard into the caber, so I'm pulling my hands in towards my belly, and I'm pushing my right shoulder into the caber. And depending on how much space we have and how long it takes me to really gain control and feel balanced, I usually try to take 3 hard steps, driving my right shoulder into the caber. And when I feel the pressure release from my shoulder, pull your hands up through your chin as fast as you can.
Wow.
We really need to Google this. I just want to see.
Oh, I watched videos before.
I'm just interested now because I'm like, okay, like I just want to actually see somebody do it. It's interesting.
And even back when she was still teaching with us, when she first started getting into it and she would talk about it, Mike Green and I spent a long time
in
the office on YouTube. Like, does she really do this? Know, is this right? What she does? Because every time we'd see her in the hallway, we'd have a conversation like, okay, now, do you really throw this? And she'd be like, yeah, that's all. Like,
so obviously, like, it at a competition, you do all of the events?
That depends on the time and the athletic director. Ideally, you do all of them. You have to do at least 5 in order for it to be counted as a games.
Okay.
So if you don't do at least 5, it won't get recorded in NASGA, which you don't want to do that. But usually, yeah, you'll do 7 to 9 events.
Okay.
Is the caber usually last?
Yes.
Okay, because I was going to say, I would think after I've glued my hands up, yeah, together, I wouldn't...
Well, yeah, the hammers, people also tend to use tacky.
Really?
So, yeah, because you ideally are creating a lot of force. And the perfect hammer is a long hammer, so you don't want to be squeezing onto it super tight. So you use some pretty good tacky so your hands are relatively glued until you let go of it.
Okay.
And then sometimes it takes some of your skin with it.
Ugh.
That's awesome.
Par for the course.
I guess taking one for the team on that one.
Yeah, I carry a little spray bottle of like the Nu Skin stuff in my bag. So if it rips off, I can just spray some Nu Skin on it. We're good.
I mean, if you're going to be in the Highland Games, you should lose some skin somewhere.
Obviously, you got to be pretty
tough. You
got to
be tough.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No disrespect to ballerinas, but it's not the ballet. No. I mean.
No, not at all.
And competitions can last anywhere from 6 to 10 hours. So you got to be tough if you're in it.
Really?
Wow. Okay, so let's move into some of those competitions. This is year number three for you?
I think so. They're all starting to run together, but I do believe I'm moving into my third season.
How many competitions per year do you typically do?
Maybe 17 or 18.
Really?
Wow.
And it really can be however much or however little you want. This season, we're having an issue. There's a group out of Ohio that does a lot of games that are relatively local, 2 to 3 hour drive from Columbus. And they are not able to do as many games. They lost a bunch of festivals. So most Highland games are associated with a Scottish or an Irish festival.
Oh, okay.
And they lost festivals because towns didn't renew permits or there wasn't enough interest. And so I'm having a really hard time coming up with games this first half of the season. Like Saturday, I'm headed to Missouri.
Oh, well, that was my next question is like, how far do you have to travel for some of these?
Yeah, I try not to travel more than 2 or 3 hours.
And I'm sure you could really travel if you wanted to travel.
Yeah. There are some in, I think right at the beginning of May, there's a big game that's in British Columbia. There are some out in Oregon and Washington.
I mean, is there any like in the United States, like any region like the Midwest that has a lot more than others, or is it just pretty sporadic?
It's pretty sporadic. It's becoming more and more common. So right. lots of areas are jumping on the bandwagon.
Interesting.
Do you look for sponsors in this to help you?
I have not in the past. I'm starting to kind of put that in my mind. Up to this point, I did not realize kind of how much success I could have in the Highland Games and what it would take to do that. So that's probably a conversation that will happen in the pretty near future. Because there are a lot of pay games, even for women, but you have to get there first. So
what is the process of getting there?
Well, most of the big games, you have to apply, which is just an online application or an email to the athletic director. Really simple information, you know, what are your PRs? What was your NASGA rank at the end of last year? Which then they can go back and look up. So
yeah, I was going to say, because
so, you know, it's not like you could lie.
It doesn't really help you to lie.
I can't apply today and say I've done all this stuff.
No. So, although I've run into some issues because my name did change at the end of last season. Now I'm competing as someone new, but they've been pretty good at working with me. So you're going to go through and apply, and if you get accepted, then generally you just have to find your way there. And so for some of them, it's not a big deal to get there. For others, that might mean, you know, airfare, hotels, all that stuff. I've never been denied a games, so.
Well, I'll throw it out now. I mean, if we have any listeners that are looking to sponsor someone in something kind of unique or different,
that'd
I mean,
be cool.
Reach out to us, hit us up on our social media. We'll put you in contact with, you know, Victoria, because again, and I've not only worked with Victoria, but I now follow her on Facebook. And if we're going to get into kind of her training regimen and stuff here in just a second, but this is not just, I mean, it's not just a hobby. I don't want to call it a hobby, because you're working all the time to compete at this.
It is like a part-time job. It's a little bit more than a part-time job, really, because every decision has to be made based on, does this help me? Does this make me better? Or, you know, does it make me worse? There are very few decisions that are, you know, neutral, don't impact it at all. So it really is, it's more than a part-time job.
So you said like the season kind of start, or well, I mean, kind of is starting to kick off. Mm-hmm. So you're going to start this weekend. I mean, how far, like when does that, the season, I guess, typically run?
It, depending on where you are, is almost year round.
Okay.
So I will compete technically March. The Arnold Classic was my first games. So I will compete, open my season then, and I'll compete through October. There's a games in Indy the second weekend in October. But after that, it is usually too cold around here, and school has started up again, so it's really kind of hard for me to take 3 or 4 days and go you know, to California or Arizona. In warmer places like California and Arizona, they'll compete into December.
Interesting. Okay.
Is the now am I correct? Because we've talked a lot about all these games are outside. Is the Arnold Classic inside though?
It is. That I mean, is it is the March only in Cleveland. Games.
So,
yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, but it now is that does that kind of change everything for you?
It does. So the Arnold is really fun. And this was the second time that they have had us there for their indoor games, but because it is indoor, everything is heavier.
To lessen the...
Well, not everything. So we only throw the Braemar, but instead of throwing a stone, we actually just throw an indoor shot put. And so we'll throw a 14-pound indoor shot put. And then we have a 28-pound weight, but it's actually this special weight made by Rogue. And it's just all fabric. So, which is really cool, but so it doesn't hurt anything when
That's
it lands
cool.
on the right. ground. And then we do weight over bar with a standard weight, and they just put a lot of rubber mats on the floor and hope for the best. I think every year we break the weight, though.
Well, and the video I watched I kind of brought up earlier was the sheaf toss, mm-hmm. and the guy, the bar was underneath the rafter, but his toss went over the metal rafter in the building and then came. It was unbelievable.
Really?
That was actually a world record.
He
set a world record that day. Yeah.
And I'll pull up the video for you later, but this guy was...
It's impressive.
Yeah, he's kind of a freak.
He is one of the best in the nation as well.
Wow.
So let's talk about a little bit about your training. And obviously, you know, I've known you. You were a collegiate athlete, a collegiate coach. You've always been one who has stayed in the weight room and continued to train. But obviously with this, as in anything any of us do, whenever we have a competition or something to look forward to, I think our training ramps up more than it does when we're just, you know.
Maintaining.
Yeah, I mean, the year that we decided we were going to run the mini marathon, I was really good at running 4 or 5 times a week, and I'm still waiting to recover from that mini marathon about 5 years ago to get back into running form. I just want to make sure my body's fully recovered before I get back.
That's right. It makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Recovery time is important. Yeah, I told my players every year I coach that recovery is very important, and I'm on a 5-year recovery right now from a mini marathon. But so kind of take us through what your training regimen looks like.
Yeah. So I am also actually a certified strength and conditioning coach. So the weight room is really my home away from home. So my training varies depending on the season, the time of year. But it is always kind of a cycle of, okay, now postseason. So the end of October will start like a building phase. I don't want to say bulking because I'm an adult now. So like just gaining lots of extra weight to get stronger isn't a great plan. But so through the winter, we usually focus on, okay, it's time to get bigger, time to get stronger. And then once we start getting closer to the Arnold, so like right now, I do kind of a conjugate program. So the first 2 days of the week is Monday is a really heavy lower body day. And then Tuesday is a really heavy upper body day. Wednesday is lots of mobility and kind of recovery. And then Thursday and Friday are speed. So like Monday and this cycle has been just brutal. But I write my own programs, so I know what I'm in for.
I saw you mention that on Facebook the other day, that you write your own programs, but they're awful.
I have no one to be angry with but myself, because I'm the jerk who sets the goals, and then I'm the jerk who makes the program to meet the goals.
Right.
But so like Monday, I will do heavy clean pulls and then heavy back squats, and then some just brutal hamstring work. Because that's a weakness for myself. And then on Thursday, I will do box squats with a pause, but only at like 60 to 65% of my max. So moving really quickly and then really short timed rests in between. So just recruiting as fast as I can.
So to Are there any lifts that you do that are more specific to the events you do? Or is it mostly, do you stay pretty well with the Olympic lifts and those kind of things?
I stay pretty well with the Olympic lifts because I like them. And they're, you know, if it works, it works. There is some specific, some hammer specific stuff that I will do. Hammer specific. What I do is all hammer specific. There are all event specific workouts that you can get if you know the right people. They are mostly kind of core stuff. I don't do it too, a whole lot with it. I just prefer to do drills.
So in the off season, is most of it just like lifting and that kind of stuff? Or do you also practice, you know, like your technique? And I mean, and I mean, like, where do you practice? I mean, we heard about the one that you do in your backyard, but like some of the other ones.
Yeah. So I like for off season to mostly be lifting because I'm going to get up and go to the gym anyway. But that doesn't help you get better at actually throwing stuff. So off season is a lot when it's cold and snowy. It's a lot of drills. And I actually just do those in my garage.
Oh, okay.
We have I have a trig that I have taped on the floor. And I move all the cars out. And our garage is not conditioned space, but it's really well insulated space. So once I get in it and start moving, I can usually get it up to, you know, 65 degrees, which is pretty comfortable. And then I just go through whatever drills I can go through in my little tape trig.
Very cool.
That's cool.
So just because, and I know how impressive you are as a, you talked about your power, and I, again, I'm an old football coach that spent a lot of time in the weight room watching. If you look at me now, you can tell that I've not spent a whole lot of time lifting lately, but a lot of time working with kids in the weight room. Can you tell us what your maxes are? Because I think a lot of people would be impressed with what you're able to do, because your power is very impressive.
I can give you a rough estimate. I actually haven't maxed out in a long time.
That's okay.
So I know my power clean max is sitting somewhere like 225, 235. Snatches are not as good, really like 140 is my top end. I have not maxed a power lift in quite some time because that doesn't translate quite as well to my sport. I can say, let's see, this week on deadlifts, I did four sets of eight at 275.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm going to guess my max is pretty good. back squat last time I tested was somewhere around 335. I'm not a good squatter because I have a really absurdly long femurs, so I travel in a weird path. And bench press, I think, is somewhere around 225. I've been doing sets of 10 with 135 and 145, so can probably move a pretty good amount.
That's, you know,
that was like in high school was probably like my max. She's doing it 10 times, and I'm like struggling.
The basketball that you shot from the 3-point line wasn't nearly
slightly
as heavy.
Lighter than a lot of the stuff she's done.
Yeah, you had a pretty good athletic career, but with much lighter implements.
Much lighter
than
yeah.
what Victoria's used. So, kind of tell us. You know, you said you're going to Missouri here this weekend. For some of our listeners that may be around this area, what are some places or some games that you know of that we could look up? I mean, I don't want to force you off the top of your head to have every date, but where are some places we come watch you?
Well, the Columbus Games is
Columbus, Indiana.
Really? We have a Scottish festival. It's the weekend after Labor Day, so I think maybe the 8th and 9th of September. Not exactly sure on the dates, but it is the weekend after Labor Day always. So you can come out to that. We're working really hard to make that a bigger festival and a bigger game, so we will have 2 days of competition. So we'll have groups competing Saturday and Sunday, and we will have a couple pros out on the field just giving tips and talking to people, and we will have commentators all day long explaining what's happening on the field. So
very
it's
cool.
Pretty cool. And then I think the 14th is the second weekend in October. There's the games in Indianapolis, which is also pretty good. It's a pretty good games. And I think they have a decent festival. If you are up to travel, the Dublin Irish Festival in Dublin, Ohio is, in August, first or second weekend in August. It is awesome.
Really?
I would recommend, if you are not opposed to a couple hours in the car, it's an awesome festival, huge festival. They'll have a gigantic main stage with performers all day long, and they have, you know, so tons of clans. If you're Scottish and you want to know about heritage, or if you're not Scottish and you want to know about heritage, they have clans, and they display their tartans and their family history, and then they have a huge field. That's one of the games you have to apply to get into, and you have to be hitting certain marks. If you're not hitting those marks, you don't get in.
Wow.
They want to put on a good show.
Wow.
So, with the Columbus games, again, to kind of throw that out there, if somebody's interested in sponsoring the games, are the games looking for sponsors as well?
Probably.
Okay.
I can get you that contact information.
Yeah, if you want to, we'll share it out on our social media so that, again, we don't have a huge following yet, but we'll at least get it out to those people and do what we can. Because
yeah, I didn't even know that they did that.
It is a really cool thing, I think, to go see. If somebody's listening that maybe has been a high school thrower or a collegiate thrower, and or, you know, just enjoys throwing heavy things, and that's the best way you describe it.
Yes.
When I've talked to you several times, is I just throw
like
heavy
it.
Things.
And
I just like it. If they do, how do they get started? Where do they go look for people that maybe, you know, can help them in this?
That's a really good question. You can find more and more online, kind of on social media, people who are interested. I guess if there are people listening who really want to give it a go, if they wanted to reach out to me, we could certainly set something up. I can't guarantee I'll train with them all the time, but I could hang out with them and get them started. I don't actually know. So had a friend talk me into it. We competed in the Columbus Games because it was right at home. Might as well. I bought a kilt off of Amazon. Had it like prime shipped to me because I don't know what I was doing.
Right.
It's also a heavy wool. Don't get a wool kilt, turns out.
Yeah, I wouldn't know anything about it. So
I found the cheapest kilt that
I
could find.
That's what I would do.
I've not shopped for a whole lot of kilts
Amazon
in my day.
It's Amazon Prime and cheap. So,
yeah,
you know.
Right? What we do. And actually, he and I both won the Columbus Games, and he decided he was going to make it a whole thing. I just went on about my life like, okay, that was fun. You know, it is what it is. And he made some contacts in the sport, started doing it, and then the following June, so that was September, the next June, he once again just kind of peer pressured me and said, hey, I'm going to this games in Kentucky. It's the first weekend in June. You're not in school anymore. You don't have any excuses. Like, if nothing else, you can come along and we'll hang out and it'll be a fun day. And so, yeah, fine, whatever. I'm not doing anything. I guess I can go. And I went down, and he, God bless him, he didn't pay a lot of attention, though. He had no idea that women didn't compete that day.
Oh, man.
So I had to throw with the men. That was my options, either not throw and drive 3 hours to Kentucky and sit under a tent all day and watch them throw, or just throw with them. So,
knowing you, you threw with them.
I just threw with them. I actually beat a good number of them. I was very pleased.
That's awesome.
So I just jumped in with the guys and threw with the guys, and it was, you know, a hit or miss day because they started sheaf higher than women would have, so I didn't do so great there. But so competed, came home, was, you know, thinking about it. At that games, I met a pro who he was competing in. He was an exhibition, so he wasn't technically competing, but he was throwing in the master's class. And he said, you know, you seem like you're really good at this. You seem like you have a knack for it. I think you should keep going. So, you know, taking that, bringing it home with me. We talked about it the drive home. A couple weeks later, get contact from this gentleman who said, I really think that you need to keep doing it. I'm bringing my kids for a hammer lesson because Zach, my training partner, was also in the Olympic trials hammer thrower, so he's really good. Yeah, he's really good at sports. So I'm bringing my boys up to train with Zach for a day. I have some stuff for you. And when Brady came up, he had made me every female implement. Like, he just went home and made them and, like, found me a fork and brought it all up and said, okay, now you have everything. You don't have an excuse
now, really no excuses.
It's always peer pressure with you.
Yeah, it's apparently I give in to peer pressure. So at that point, I did. It was kind of like, well, I have everything. I really don't have an excuse. And he took the time to make me all these. And maybe he just had them laying around and was just getting rid of old junk. But
it meant something.
It worked. It did. It made me feel very special.
Yeah.
So we went for it. Turns out I'm pretty good at it.
And I've got some lessons from my education classes on peer pressure. I'll share those with you after we get off the show. Some strategies.
I appreciate that.
For helping to deal with that. You've talked a little bit about, you know, Zach being a pro and being a pro. What is the difference between the amateur and the pro?
On the women's side, absolutely nothing at this point. On the men's side, once you have turned pro, you can no longer compete amateur.
Okay.
So they have classes on, sometimes they have classes on the women's side, but not as often because we don't have quite enough competitors. But on the men's side, you have lightweights, which is under 200 pounds, typically. Some games it'll be under 190. So if you're a smaller person, you compete.
Yeah, you're talking about the weight of the actual competitor.
The weight of the physical, yeah, of the physical person. So if you're a smaller guy, or just really tall and thin, you can compete against smaller people. And then they have C, B, and A class amateurs. Cs are novices who have either never done a games or haven't done very many. Once you win a games as a C, you become a B class competitor. When you win a games as a B, you become an A class competitor.
Okay.
Once you are an A, you stay an A indefinitely until you age into a master's class. Or if you get good enough, you can declare yourself professional and try to get invited to pro games. Pro games means you get paid.
Okay.
So, but once you have declared pro, there's no going back to being an amateur.
So probably more travel, more commitment, because you're not going to have all those amateur games to go around.
Correct. But most of the pro games that Zach is going to be traveling to, he's going to get a travel stipend. So they're going to pay. They're going to pay to get him there. They're going to put him in a hotel wherever he is, and then there's prize money on top of it.
All right. The master class, because I saw that in the Columbus games when I looked it up. There's a master class and an amateur class, correct?
Correct.
What's the difference there?
I think you have to be 40 to to compete in the masters, 40 or 45.
So masters is kind of like the senior and senior PGA or whatever.
Okay. And some games, if they're big enough, they'll have stages of master's classes. So like 40 to 50, 50 to 60.
Gotcha.
Gotcha. Very cool. All right. Well, we are at... Crazy enough, we're at an hour that we've been talking about the Highland Games.
That is crazy.
And I want to first of all say that, you know, thank you for coming down and spending time with us.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a really, really cool thing. And I'm just going to throw it out right now. And I've already talked about it. If anybody is kind of interested in going to a Games, when did you say the Dublin one was? August?
I think the second week in August. I can send you the exact dates when I get home. I have it all on my schedule.
Yeah, shoot those to me, and we'll talk about them on our next episode. But my plan is to attend one of the games, whether that's Columbus, Indy, or Dublin. But I'm kind of leaning towards Dublin after you brought that up. If somebody wants to jump in the car and ride with me, we're going to go over. I think we're going to do a little bit of a remote Married with Children, the podcast over. We'll go over and get some interviews and talk to some people. And I think that could be a real interesting follow-up. Obviously, I'm going to ask that you come back after we attend the games.
Oh, yeah.
I would love for you, if Zach is willing to come back as well.
Absolutely.
Have him come on as well so we can kind of talk this. Because, you know...
And give me some time to watch some of these videos so I can, like, watch it and be like, and then
I did tell you last week she was coming on.
I know. But
I mean.
But now that I've heard about it, now I can, like, watch and be like, oh, yeah, that's what she was talking about.
So what you're saying is you weren't interested in her until she came, and now you are.
No, I'm not saying that.
Well, it kind of sounded like that. but what I want everybody to know is a lot of times around here in southern Indiana, we say that, well, there's nothing to do. There's nothing, you know, there's no entertainment. And I think sometimes we miss interesting and unique things like this.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you think there's no way I would be interested in that, go and watch it one time and see what it's like, because... If you haven't, YouTube some of these videos, because the events, when you watch the men and the women involved in this, it is not only skill, but the power and strength involved is unbelievable.
Yes.
So, again, if you have interest in sponsoring Victoria, please reach out to us, marriedwithchildrenshow@gmail.com, or hit us up on our social media. I will be happy to put you in contact with her. And I will even throw out a little bit of a special here. If you will reach out to sponsor Victoria, because I am so gracious that she came on as a guest, I will give you sponsorship time on the podcast for sponsoring her. So you get a kind of a double deal.
Two for one, yeah.
If you will sponsor her in her quest here in the Highland Games, and you reach out to us, I will also put you on for the rest of the calendar year. On every episode, I will list you as a sponsor of the Married with Children Show podcast. So that's a two for one right there. You get to help her, and you get a little bit of a publicity here as well. So
that sounds like a great deal.
Hey.
If anyone is interested, and strong ladies specifically is your jam, another one that's really cool is in Glasgow, Kentucky.
Okay.
The first weekend in June, so a little earlier in the season, but it is Women's Nationals. So
okay.
It will be essentially the top 10 women in the nation competing head-to-head.
And you will be there?
I have not yet been invited. Which I don't know if that's because invites haven't gone out. So they start that by just asking the top 10 women
right.
on the list if they want to come. And I actually finished last season 12th on NASGA.
Okay.
Because my season ended right after the Columbus Games, and it was not a great season because I got married and moved and got a new job.
Yeah. You had a few things going on.
I had a lot on my plate, and Highland Games kind of took a backseat. So I assume that at 12th I'm still going to get invited, but I haven't gotten the email yet.
Interesting.
Let us know.
Yeah.
If you get that email, again, we'll push that out on our social media, because that would be a good games to go to and watch as well.
Yeah.
And again, guys, I'm just going to say it. If you're looking for something unique and you've got a business, this is not just a hobby. It's not a pastime for Victoria. She is working constantly at it, and it's really cool to watch. And I will definitely be at the games this summer and this season to support her and watch her and get some more interviews. So if you are interested in helping her out, please get with us and let us know. Victoria, again, I'm going to say thank you so much for coming down.
Yeah, it's been fun.
I know it's a little bit of a drive from Columbus, and we really appreciate it. So
absolutely. Anytime.
Callie, anything else?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. Everybody have a great week. Thank you. All right. Before we take off tonight, I want to, again, point you guys in the direction of a couple great podcasts if you're looking for something else to take a listen to. The first one being Smugcast. Again, it is a male and adult theme podcast, but a great one if you're into kind of male adult humor. Check out the guys AP and BJ at Smugcast. They just started a great video platform on Twitch. You can check them out on Saturday nights, I believe, are most of the times that they're going to be recording, so check them out on Twitch. And then our guest coming up next Saturday is Justin Juice Kelly from the Juice in the Morning podcast. Make sure you download, and on all of those, please subscribe, rate, and review each one of those along with our podcast. We'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast as well. So check out those podcasts when you get a chance. Again, thank you for tuning in, and today we're going to play ourselves out with a little Scottish traditional music that would fit right in with our Highland Games theme today. So check out a little Scottish traditional music.